You can begin.
Okay, I'm going to repeat this, Henry, so that we can test the tape. Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2, Ruth Adelson and Hope Layton interviewing Henry Posner Jr., October 1st, 1994. Mr. Posner, would you please tell us your address?
1071 Lyndhurst Drive.
Okay, stop it. And let's start. Mm-hmm. Henry, I think to begin, I'd like to review a little bit about your immediate ancestors after having read the information that you gave us. As I understand it, your great-grandmother was Dorothea Felsenhart, and your great-grandfather was Harry Rabinowitz. That's on your maternal side.
Yes.
Okay.
And no, that was on my father's.
On your father's side.
Yes.
Oh, okay. And oh, right. And his mother was Fanny Rabinowitz, married to Roman Posner, who died at a very young age, at around 33 years of age. Okay. And your father had two brothers, Max and George. Okay. Your mother was the daughter of Jenny Selznick Meltzer and Isaac Meltzer. And Jenny was the daughter of Joseph Selznick and his first wife. Do you know her name?
Let's see, ask me again.
Joseph Selznick's first wife. As I understand it, he was married three times.
Yes. No, I don't know. Okay. My mother was Jenny's daughter, mm-hmm. and I don't know the names of his other wives.
Okay. And I think we do have on tape your mother's brothers and sisters, so we won't go over that again. And your father, and you are the only child of Henry Posner and Ida Edith
yes.
Meltzer. Okay. I read the information that you had read at the Carnegie Mellon dedication, I guess it was,
yes.
about your father, and he sounded like a terrific man. I wondered if you could tell us more. He sounded a tremendous salesman, a businessman of great creativity. Can you tell us what he was like in your own words? Can you describe him to us?
Physically, he was about 5'10", of medium build, and like me, he had a receding hairline. My father was always meticulous in his habits, in his dress, in his manners toward outsiders. I think that my father having spent his early years in Europe, where royalty was highly regarded, I think that had a respect for royalty and really, in many respects, tried to emulate their habits and their tastes. My father, when he lived in Fox Chapel, and he was still a younger man, had a horse. When he rode his horse, he was properly equipped with jog furs and riding boots. And he was inclined to be a very formal man in his dealings with others. He was an avid reader, and because of his interest in collecting fine arts, he read extensively about the various subjects in which he was interested. For example, he became interested in rugs, and so he had what was called an elephant portfolio, which was a book with pages about each page was about 2 feet by 2 feet, and had very detailed color photographs of different rugs. And it's possible to determine by the design characteristics, by the number of knots per square inch, and by the kind and tightness of the knots, the various tribes, Turkish tribes, which were the weavers of these rugs. They also collected ivories, and knew a great deal about the origin and carving of ivories. And they also did the same with the jade carvings that they collected. But his principal interest had to do with what are called incunabula, which were books printed before 1830, I believe. And he became very knowledgeable about these and had one of the finest collections in the United States. All of these things are presently at the Hunt Library in the rear book room at the Carnegie Mellon University, the carvings. He liked to travel, and he always went first class. So, and I think he was moderate in his habits. I did see him on a few occasions smoking cigarettes or a cigar, but it was certainly no habit. And although he did alcohol on business occasions, I never knew him to even drink wine in the course of normal evenings. A large house in Fox Chapel on Pasadena Drive. It was that had been built for David Lehman, and he bought it in 1937 and lived there until he died in 1976. It was a house on almost 7 acres of land, and my father also was very interested in gardening. To have a full-time gardener, worked a lot himself in the gardens, an extensive vegetable garden, and an extensive garden for top flowers, as well as the landscape around the front.
I'm getting an impression of a very cultured, rather formal man, and yet he must have been able to relate to people around him, to have been such a wonderful salesman, as he was when he was able to do. He was the outstanding salesman when he began that new project with the neon sign. So did he have a warmth about him, or what made it possible for him to be such a good salesman?
Well, I think it must be instinctive. He was able to intuitively understand how people thought and mm-hmm. what they were thinking about. Mm-hmm. And he extended himself with his customers. I think he was a difficult person to work for or to work with because he was very exacting and very demanding. But the people who worked for him respected him, and they liked him a great deal. Even the workmen with whom he had relatively little contact were very very emotionally involved in the job. So I think he was well liked. But he had a very strong personality, and there were people who didn't like him. They felt as strongly about him that way as others did about him.
How about you? How would you say you related with him as a child and then working with him?
Well, it was the relationship changed dramatically when I began to work for him. Up until that time, he did a great deal for me, and it was clear that being an only child, I was the most important thing for my mother's and father's lives. But someplace along the line, a few years after I started to work for him, the relationship really deteriorated. And it was, especially after the years approximating the time that he retired and the following years, it was a rather difficult relationship. And it's not an unusual experience and one that I hope to avoid myself.
We live and learn. They say we learn from our relatives how to behave. Your father came from Poland, and yet when he came here, your Jewish religion was not important to him or to your mother and to you. What was his upbringing at his home? Was there any religion? What was the religion, the religious orientation? Was he bar mitzvah, you know, that sort of thing? Were they traditional at all?
I honestly don't know.
Okay.
I suspect not, because I don't. I think that my father was not very sympathetic with any formalized religion. I think that a lot of it had to do with the experience that he must have had as a young man. I think Poland in those years was a very difficult place for everybody who was Jewish. And I think that the combination of avoiding that kind of difficulty by not being overtly Jewish, and the fact that left Europe because he did not like the life that he had left behind. It must have affected his thinking. When he arrived in this country sometime in his teens, I think he was so preoccupied with earning a living, learning a new language, have much time for him. But I never attended any religious school. In fact, I really never attended any Jewish religious service until after I got out of college. Mm-hmm.
I wondered if I could ask a favor of you. That speech you made at Carnegie Mellon delineates very clearly the steps in your father's career, and wondered if we could have it on tape, beginning with the time you told us about when he was a surveyor and when he had worked on the done the work that brought him to Pittsburgh. But after he was approached by the men with this new technology for science, could we have that on tape, please? What happened when they came to him?
Well, he was approached by two men. There was a George Kester, who was a promoter, and George Claude, who was a French physicist, who had developed what later became known as too. They said that they had heard that he was a very good sign salesman, the best in Western Pennsylvania, and they wanted him to represent them in Western Pennsylvania. And so he did enter into an arrangement with them whereby the profits from the sales during the first 90 days would be used to purchase stock in the new corporation, which was known as the Alpha Club Neon Corporation, the first licensee of the Club Neon Lights of America, which was headquartered in New York City. During those 90 days, he sold so many signs that he wound up with his controlling shareholder in Alpha Club Neon. During the early years, he made very good money. And in 1928, I believe it was, he started to take 4 or 6 weeks vacation each year, and he took us to my mother and me to Europe. And in the course of this, we crossed the Atlantic at least a dozen times on various different famous ocean liners. It turned out in those years that every time we went away, we made more money than if we stayed and managed the business. But then in 1932, the Depression, everything fell apart. Any of the contracts that he had for his signs, which were then leased rather than sold, with the customers were unable to pay their bills. So at that point, he decided that he had to get into another line of business, and he went into the outdoor advertising business. That business involved the leasing of properties, the building of signs, and the essentially leasing of the use of the advertising space. And he was a very top competitor, and even though he was at that time in competition with the General Outdoor Advertising Corporation, which was the largest such entity in the United States and probably in the world. He was very successful in 1935. Then he merged the two companies to form the Pittsburgh Outdoor Advertising Corporation. At that time, my father then became a minority shareholder, but the manager of the business. And in those early years, the profits that he was able to generate in the outdoor advertising business in Pittsburgh almost exactly matched the losses that the General Outdoor was experiencing in all of its other operations. As the years went by, as a reward for his services, he was permitted to buy additional stock in Pittsburgh Outdoor Advertising until he was quite good, had about 25% of the stock. The other shareholders in the Alpha Club Neon Corporation also had their stock converted to stock in Pittsburgh Outdoor Advertising, and collectively they owned about 10% of the stock. So that by 1955, the Alpha Club New York shareholders owned about 35% of the stock. And at that time, General Outdoor Advertising, encountered the second of a series of antitrust cases filed against them by the Justice Department, and as part of a consent decree, the second consent decree, they were required to divest themselves of three major markets, one of which was Pittsburgh. At that time, in 1952, I, having had three years of experience working with my father, I bought an outdoor advertising company in Baltimore called the Morton Company, and had an opportunity then to sell that business in 1955, and took proceeds of that sale, along with money which we were able to borrow from Capital Life, and we were able to buy General Outdoor's interest in Pittsburgh Outdoor Advertising, so that the 35% that is owned by the former Alpha Club Neon shareholders now own 100% of the business. And then in 1963, we sold the business to General to a new corporation which was owned 82% by General Cannon Rubber, 9% by my father, and 9% by me. And then in 1968, we borrowed money from Massachusetts Mutual and were able to buy from General Tyler their interest in Pittsburgh Outdoor Advertising. So at that point, my father and I each owned a half interest in Pittsburgh Outdoor Advertising. And the original shareholders who had owned 10%, who owned 10% of Pittsburgh Outdoor Advertising is controlled by General Cannon Rubber. They then bought out in the initial transaction of General Tyre, and for each share of stock for which they had paid $5, they received $1,185 a share. In addition to having received the dividends each year, which, as I recall, were around $15 a share.
It must have been the best investment they ever made in their lives, or well, one of the best.
It turned out to be a good investment, but it's also a very, very good investment for my family. And my father retired around 1971, and at that time he sold his interest back to the company, and so at that time we bought by that time my children owned stock in the business, so that then, along with my children, we don't all of Pittsburgh Outdoor Advertising.
Well, I guess my next question is, could you describe your mother?
Yes. Can we interrupt this?
Of course. Of course. Well, I wondered if you would describe your mother.
My mother was, I remember, as being a very pretty lady, slender. She weighed about 110 pounds, and she had what was then called auburn hair. She had a very fair skin and a very clear complexion. She had a very good sense of humor, but she was very quiet, and my father always dominated the conversations. Helped him a great deal with her patience and her support the years that my father was, in fact, all the years that my father was in business, he worked very hard. And I can remember as a child, maybe 10 years, that he would come home for. It was my job to get on the phone and call about 6 o'clock to find out when he was coming home. And he would generally come home around 7:30. We would have dinner, and then we'd get back to his office. And so it was difficult for my mother, but she put up with it, and she was very supportive of whatever he wanted to do. Although I think she would have preferred that he had made less money and spent more time at home. She was an affectionate person. Like my father, I think that she was primarily focused on me, and yet when it came time for me go to high school. At the time, I was going to Shadyside Academy, and they felt that it was best for me to be a boarding student, which meant on the seventh day boarding student, and I would get home for perhaps one weekend out of every six. Plus the holidays and summers. And I think in hindsight, I can see there was a tremendous sacrifice on their part, but it did turn out to be, I think, very good for me and very important for me. I think that she was a very realistic person in many respects, more so than my father. She was also a very frugal person. I can remember when I was still in a crib and we lived on Jansen Street, waking up from an afternoon nap, and my mother made all of her own clothes, and she made all of my clothes, and so. Woke up, I can remember seeing her sitting at the sewing machine in front of the window. And in later years, we traveled downtown by streetcar, and she would visit the various department stores. It was Kaufman and Bayer's, Horns. At that time, I think it was Frank and Cedar. Mm-hmm. And so we would shop all of these stores trying to find the proper color thread at the best price. And she had a butcher that liked her very well. And so she would bring, holding me by the hand, and the butcher would give me a raw hot dog, which I would eat on the spot, and meditation for rare meat ever since. But
is it time to turn the tape?
Okay.